Well, hey guys, so I want to welcome Ellie Whitefleet to the podcast. She is a product owner and she helps a lot of things at this company called the Power MBA, which they basically help, you know, upcoming entrepreneurs, business owners to learn about the principles of business, how business is going on now, especially digitally. And they actually can certify you with an MBA just online as you take the program. And they have a lot of communities all around the world, I think in over 100 countries. And I just wanted to talk about the future of education, you know, where things are going, because a lot of people recognize that school and colleges don't really teach you, you know, the things that are up to date anymore. And so you really have to learn yourself or go to things like the Power MBA or, you know, learn from YouTube or on TikTok or even Instagram, you know, because a lot of times the things they teach in the textbook, it's outdated now. And the new methods of marketing and, you know, how things are evolving and changing so fast is not up to date with the school system. So, welcome Ellie to podcast and welcome to the show.
Hey, happy to be here. I agree with so many of the things you said. Actually, I don't know if you can agree or disagree. They're just kind of facts, right? The fact that traditional education is a little bit outdated, especially when it comes to business. You know, like even back when I was studying, I studied business undergrad and I have an MBA. But back when I reflect back on my studies, like a traditional university, a traditional business program, I always even said like this program should be so much more based in internships and practice and actually being in the field, because it makes no sense to sit in a classroom and talk about management problems when you're 20 years old, 19 years old. Like, am I really going to learn that much from this case study and an abstract conversation about a management problem that happened at a factory 15 years ago as an example? You know, like, it's good to be aware, but like, do you really learn how to be a better leader by sitting in a classroom and having those discussions? I'm not sure.
So where you said you got your MBA there and then now you're working with the Power MBA. Well, I think a lot of it is, yeah, like you realize, you know, a lot of things that are essential to learn in life or in business, like you have to learn by doing it. You know, for example, you know, I didn't learn, you know, marketing and all that by going to school. I learned it by kind of doing it and learning it, you know, by doing it. But a lot of times if you just study too much, you realize it's like nothing to what it's really like. So I think Elon Musk said that too. He's like, I don't hire people with MBAs because I don't know, it doesn't mean you know anything about business, right? It's just, you know, a lot of these theories, but like practically, you know, it doesn't show you're like a critical thinker or like you could innovate or adapt. So what was your experience with like doing the regular route MBA and then like the Power MBA and kind of where you think things are going?
Yeah, education. I guess before I get into my personal experience, I could say a few things just to like set the scene about like what are the core differences, you know? So the Power MBA was created as an idea of kind of trying to disrupt this problem of higher education, especially in business, is so, so expensive. And so then it's not that accessible for a lot of people. It's also typically before COVID was very tied to physical locations. So unless you went to that city, to that specific school to learn, you know, you really had to uproot your life. And most people would put their careers on hold for a year or even 2 years to go get an MBA. So the idea was trying to get the best practitioners and speakers and people who know about these content areas as instructors, bring them in a digital format so you don't have to physically go to where they are. And also that helps to bring the cost way, 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 way down. So the Power MBA is less than $1,000 and it's more than 300 classes. I think it's nearing 400 classes at this point of material, 30 to 40% of which is taught directly from practitioners, people in the field, founders, CEOs, executives, experts in their area, authors, from leading companies and really big names that you would know, like Netflix, YouTube, author of Lean Startup. I really could go on and on, but also medium-sized companies, small scrappy startups, bringing in voices from different countries. It's not just fully focused on US profiles, you know? So that's like what the idea of the Power MBA is. In 15 minutes a day, you get practical information, but we actually do still base it on the core business curriculum of a traditional MBA. You know, there's definitely a lot to be learned in an MBA, but it's exactly what you're touching on. Is this the best format? Is the quality and price comparison match up? Spoiler alert, definitely not, I think, for a lot of people. But in my specific case, people ask me all the time, especially because I already did my MBA and I'm so familiar with the Power MBA, what I would do or what I suggest. And it really matters what your goals are. If you're trying to start a business, if you want to upskill, stay ahead of trends, learn things and put them into practice, I really don't think you need an MBA for that, a traditional MBA at least. However, if you're trying to change cities or countries, really change careers completely, get a job in a different field, or a different sector, an MBA can be really useful for that in terms of the networking and taking a full year to focus really in on what you're trying to go and do instead. There are some fields in which an MBA is still required or really respected, like if you're going into consulting or if you're in a huge company that has a traditional hierarchical management structure, sometimes they want this. You know, there's a lot of companies that sponsor people to go get their MBA. There's a lot of value and personal growth that comes from that experience, but I think it's really a matter of laying your options out on the table and considering. And like, if you want to take it back to the undergrad level, if you're interested in going into business, I think unless you want to be like specifically an accountant or in finance management where you need that traditional degree, you need that title because those fields are still really tied to that kind of thing. Okay, maybe that makes sense for you. But other than that, I don't know. It's making less and less sense as we grow and develop. And especially now with COVID having accelerated everything with remote work. I mean, we see all the time too, companies like Amazon publishing their own courses. Google has come out with their own courses. LinkedIn has courses and more companies are recognizing these courses as valid and certificates that aren't a traditional degree. And sometimes you just need that. And then to demonstrate internships, practice, your own projects, you know, like having already done things, real skills. And like today, there's so much information out there on the internet. There's so many opportunities to do like apprenticeships and get your hands dirty in things, as long as you have something as a basis for the theory behind. I think that's a really strong combination and is starting to compete very seriously with the need for a traditional degree.
So what made you want to work with the Power MBA for you, I guess, specifically?
Yeah, before this, I was working at another startup here based in Madrid. It's called Bridge for Billions, and it's a platform for entrepreneurs to build out a business plan and have a mentor and kind of walk them through that, like really early stage entrepreneurs. Kind of similar mission to open up access to quality mentorship and knowledge and learning about entrepreneurship for a really cheap price. It's a 3-month program for, I think, around $500. And they get a lot of sponsorships from companies. So some people can even do the program for free because they saw this problem where like the people who have access to quality information and good mentorship and capital and investment tend to be people who already live in big cities, who already have a lot of expensive education behind them. And that leaves a ton of people out of that circle. So I was working there and then I just got approached by the people at the Power MBA to come do this. And the scale of the project was really exciting, bringing in the founders of Netflix, Shazam, Waze, and talking to them about what they did, how they did it, and really like sitting down with them face to face and asking them like, what's your best advice for people out there who want to learn? It just was too good of an opportunity to say no. So yeah, at the Power MBA, we're constantly looking at which programs to build to help students learn. We actually right now are kind of going through a rebranding. We're going to become the Power Business School because everything just started with one program, an MBA, but now we have a lot of programs. We have digital marketing program. We have one on digital transformation as well, agile management, some that are a little bit more soft skills, like focused on career changes or leadership and productivity and that kind of stuff. So I think the value proposition is super, super strong. And I'm not just saying that because I work here. You know, I really believe in what we're doing. I'm very like mission and purpose driven, and I wouldn't work somewhere that I didn't believe in what was happening. But the idea that we give people who wouldn't have access to such good information in a really curated way, because of course, a lot of this stuff is on YouTube or out there on Medium, or you can follow people on Instagram. The thing that makes it different at the Power MBA is it's really curated into a specific curriculum, and it takes you through step by step building blocks, and you kind of like go learning and understanding the concepts one at a time. And then at like little puzzle pieces, bringing in the voices from the people who are out there in those fields who have actually done things in those areas and piecing it together. So I'll give you an example. We talk about branding and how important this is, and just like, what is branding and positioning in the market? And what are the different levers that can help you with branding? And then there's three cases in there that I love. One is from one of the main branding guys at Apple from their campaigns back in the early 2000s. And he talks about how they built such strong brand love for Apple. So that's like a mega example company with a lot of money behind it. Everyone knows it. But then we have a startup from New York called Little Spoon, and they've been really, really good at building out community and using like building a brand around their community. And it's like a baby food company, like organic baby food. And they have such a strong community of people engaged with them, and moms and parents in general, that has really driven their growth. And that's like a totally different example. And then we have a company from over here in Europe. It's called BrewDog, and it's a beer company. They were kind of like an artisanal scrappy startup, but they're a huge, huge, huge name in London now. And kind of talking to them about the evolution of their brand, how they did a lot of guerrilla marketing. They do a lot of kind of shock tactics in the media. They have like tanks out in the street, and like they brewed a batch of beer that was like 50% alcohol. So we sit down and we talk to them about, how did you do this? Which tactics did you use? How did it go? What were the mistakes you made? So such a strong combination, you know, of getting the theory, but then also hearing from real people who have put this into practice.
Yeah, like practically. So I'm just curious to learn, like, what are some of the best things you learned? Because I feel like everything you've learned, I feel like you could start building any business you want now.
Yeah. I think my bosses are afraid I'm gonna leave one day and build my own company. I mean, they even say, they're like, our goal for everyone who works here is to like put their time in, but then in the future we hope you all go on to build your own projects and everything. And that's definitely true.
Wow. Is that, yeah. So what would you say, like, are some of the biggest lessons? I mean, because you've talked to the Netflix co-founders and stuff, and you know, all that, like, what would you say are some of your biggest takeaways from?
Yeah. Great question. I think number one, none of these people had a crystal ball when they started doing what they were doing. You know, like, they didn't know what was going to happen. It's so easy to describe what those companies did in retrospect and point out and be like, they were geniuses, you know. Or I just saw a video the other day of Simon Sinek kind of breaking down how Amazon, Netflix, and some other companies did really strategic things. And honestly, when you sit down and talk to these people about those experiences, especially when they're starting out and they're just small teams, they were just very good at questioning what was happening around them, changing really quickly, going with the data of what their customers and users needed, you know. For example, in the Netflix case, in the program, we talked to Mark Randolph about kind of the four big pivots of the company over all of these years, of how they were just DVD. In the beginning, they were just replicating what Blockbuster did online, and it really wasn't working. He said like they were going for 18 months and they almost even shut down. And so apart from that, just being like really interesting, and it's like so nice, it's so cool to hear about that. I think the lesson and the point is kind of paying attention to, and we hear this over and over again from all different companies, like the secret to their success, if you want to call it that, was taking this lean startup approach and doing little tests all the time, seeing what's working and going with what's working, and something that's not working and stopping, and not being afraid to try new things, and definitely not being afraid to say, this isn't working, we need to stop. We literally need to pull the plug and start doing something else instead. Kind of this mentality of continuous improvement, continuous learning. You hear that from so many people in the program. Like, I can't even tell you the number of times that they say, you have to fail as much as you can. You know, if you're not failing, you're not doing it right, that kind of thing. And then I guess the second one, I mean, I could probably give you like 20, but I'll just keep it to two. The other one is this idea of being focused on the mission or the purpose of what you're going for, or like the goal you're trying to achieve, even if it's not necessarily purpose driven, but the goal of like helping people do X, you know what I mean? Or solving this problem is so much more important than the solution you originally came up with. The Netflix example applies here too. You know, they wanted to help people enjoy entertainment or like tell good stories or like highlight good stories, you know, get people engaging with good stories. And that hasn't changed, even though now they produce their own content or a digital platform. Before, they used to just help you get physical DVDs, you know? So like, don't lose sight of like the goal you're trying to achieve or the problem you're trying to solve, but you definitely should always be questioning, or is the mechanism we're using to do that relevant? Is this the right one? Can we have multiple? You know what I mean? Like, you can change your product, you can change your service a million times.
Yeah, this might be a tangent, but you know, like, cause yeah, I remember Blockbuster. It's crazy, like maybe like 5-10 years from now, no one will remember. But yeah, I remember Blockbuster. They had those like cassette, like you would put in the cassette type of things, right? And then you'd watch it, and then they went into DVDs, like you said, and then now, you know, but Netflix is a streaming platform. So, you know, I guess my question was like, why didn't? And I think you kind of mentioned it. You have to adapt, because Netflix, I mean, Blockbuster, they're way ahead of Netflix when they're just starting. You know, they had an established brand, people knew them. They could have just switched to online or streaming. Like, I don't get why a lot of these big companies, they just don't adapt and or hire new talent to help them adapt, you know. So I don't know.
Timing is, I mean, definitely a tangent, but timing is the most relevant thing here. And like, when you were, but I guess there's 2 or 3 factors. I mean, I'm speaking, I don't know anything about Blockbuster or how they work corporate, or I've never studied the case, but just off like my sense of what probably happened there is, first, the timing that it was, is like the internet was still so new. It was almost like they couldn't even conceive of what was to come. Of course, that was a mistake on their part. They probably should have had someone in their innovation team, you know, like, how much does a company value innovation? But like, today, almost every serious company has, especially of a certain size, has a person or full teams, like huge teams dedicated to just thinking about what's next and staying alive and being at the cutting edge. But it really varies within the companies of how they do that, how seriously they take it, how close those people are to upper management, how integrated that is into strategic goals. And, you know, there's a difference between setting that up and talking about that versus actually doing it and valuing it and taking that information seriously. And, you know, but like, this stuff isn't, it's not easy to do. And it's definitely not easy to do when you have 50,000 people in your company, you know, or if you're in a more traditional sector, like energy or something like that, or construction, you know, you have to be really alert. And
yeah, there's more like barriers to, like you said, like to make decisions. If you're like a 50,000 member company versus like 50 member, it's like you can't make decisions quickly, right? But
and something I think it's key here is mindset. And we talk about this a lot in the Power MBA, that like the way the program is built, the intention is to help you change your mindset. So whether you're an entrepreneur building your own project, or you work at a small company, or you work at a massive company, the mindset that you bring to the table when you approach projects, is there's a common one there that's helpful to have, of like knowing what things to pay attention to, being open to making changes, keeping an eye out for what's not working, you know what I mean? Understanding customer segments, just who is this for, problem solving for these people. Like, there's a lot of language and learning and material around product market fit and solving problems for people in the entrepreneurship space. But those same conversations should absolutely be happening at every company, no matter what you're working on. Even if you work in HR, let's say, so you're not really externally focused, you're internally focused. Your users are the employees of the company, and everything you're working on should have them in mind. Like, this is definitely a product mindset, you know, like user experience design thinking kind of stuff. But like, there's a huge argument for those ideas to be central to anyone in business that's working on anything, because it just makes better services, better products, better tools, even if you're working with your internal teams.
So yeah, and I think another really interesting thing is, you know, since COVID, we were talking about this earlier, that, you know, there's more and more classes that are happening digitally, like through Zoom, but in the future, just like business meetings will be held through VR or through like Oculus, you know. Like, I saw this YouTube video, I think this was like Qualcomm and Meta, like they were doing like this conference, because Qualcomm makes like the chips for VR, I think, or something like that. But They were doing the interview in VR and in their Horizons workspace, I think that's what it's called. And then, you know, I imagine like business meetings, you're not gonna fly there, you know, or whatever, or drive there. You're gonna just put on your headset and you're gonna be there in the meeting, or you're gonna be there in class, you know. And I think Stanford offers a class just in VR, like completely. And so it's just already the top schools are recognizing that and getting into it. Maybe, you know, Power MBA might do things like that. We'll see. But, you know, because your students are from like all around the world, and I think it's pretty interesting, I guess. It's kind of different from a regular college though, because you don't like meet them or talk to them unless if you go to the networking things. But like how is that working with like an international audience of students? Is that like, yeah, just how is that? Is that?
Yeah. I guess just to clarify, you can meet as many people as you want from the Power, well, not as many people as you want from the Power MBA, but like there's a lot of opportunities to meet fellow Power MBA students, whether it's online networking events or in person. A lot of areas around the world have like a local chapter where they have ambassadors there organizing events in their space. But because we're still growing, you know, there are definitely a lot of cities that we don't cover. But literally every month we're adding like new ones. So that's been cool to watch too, the evolution of that, especially with COVID clearing up a little bit, although now it seems like we're going backwards. We were able to have a ton of in-person events from summer to like October. We did a huge event here in Madrid with like 700 people in person, and we had like 800 people online. So something that's really cool too is like the energy around that network is, at least in my experience, so much stronger than the energy around any networking event I've ever been to for my business schools, my traditional degree business schools. Just the connections that are being made there, the energy, the people that are bringing to it, the excitement, people finding founders, making sales deals across countries, getting advice from one another. It's really, really cool to watch. So our core is the content and the learning, but actually, like I would say almost 50% of the experience, if you engage with that side of the experience, is a really, really strong network. But in terms of VR, I think this is a really exciting opportunity. I mean, for every industry, but particularly in education. I think though, I wanna bring it back to like, if a traditional university is using VR to implement, like to give their classes, it doesn't change the material and the content and like the way that they're giving those classes. And when the pandemic first started, we were all on like serious lockdown over here in Madrid. I signed up for some of Harvard's classes because they made their whole catalog free. And they're some of the worst classes I ever saw. Yeah.
Whose classes are you talking about?
Harvard. So Harvard, back when, like in March 2020 or April 2020, they made this big announcement, like we're opening up our catalog for free because of like solidarity around the world and COVID and everything. I don't think it's still free, but it was just for like a limited time. So I like signed up for a couple courses and they were so dry and so boring. And like, it was in technically in the same format. Maybe I just got unlucky with the professors that I chose or the content areas I chose. But you know, it's really difficult to make an engaging class. These were long videos, kind of dragging, tons of text. They weren't edited well. It was not engaging at all, you know? So it's really like, you have to find the sweet spot of not just the format and the technology, like whether that person is giving me a class in VR or not, it doesn't change the experience of the actual learning that much in terms of the content, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's like the tech is a tool and a vehicle and definitely has a lot of possibilities for us to reach more people and interact in new ways. But if the structure of the class, the base material learning is boring and it's not engaging and it's not practical and it's not implementable, it's a bit like, okay, but like, is this actually that interesting for me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, I mean, the instructor plays a big role, but I think also in VR, you know, say like in history class, like you could actually have, I don't know, maybe a scene. It's just, I feel like there's a lot more you could do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Interactive.
Our CTO here at the company is really, really excited about VR, AR as well, kind of like the future of the metaverse and all of that. So I definitely think we'll get engaged there at some point. Not today just yet, but I think it'll be really cool for virtual networking too, because since we have these people in 100 different countries that are only meeting in person with the people that are near them, the definitely meeting people like in a virtual space would be amazing.
Yeah, like, I mean, the word metaverse is being thrown around a lot. I mean, Facebook.
Everywhere. I do like probably two or three business interviews a week, and it has been mentioned so much in the past 4 or 5 weeks.
Really interesting. I mean, Facebook changed their name to Meta. And then, you know, people are saying it's a $1 trillion industry. And, you know, it's just everything we do now, like, on the internet, Web 2 will be doing in the metaverse. And Mark Zuckerberg, he kind of explains it like, you know, you could travel to different worlds, like you could, with the touch of a button, you could go somewhere else. So you could learn, or in this VR metaverse, and then in another one, you could do your fitness class. So it's like everything you could do just, you know, online, which is kind of hard to grasp, I guess, if you haven't done it, right? Or put on your headset. It's kind of like Ready Player One type of thing, where you could, you know, hang out there, you could even exercise there, you could even learn. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of like we're already kind of doing that, being on our phones all the time, and, you know, on
right, it'll be like immersive. I think one of the concepts that's the most interesting that I've heard about is just digital, and this whole concept of like the physical and the digital world will meld. So beyond putting on the goggles and going fully immersed into a VR world, actually being in the physical world that we all live in and having AR experiences where like everything's enhanced. So you can like, there's a QR code on the wall and all of a sudden you see a painting on the wall, or like Pokemon Go, like things start appearing in the street just because you're using your device. I think that's really, really has a lot of promise, and it's a little bit more accessible for every business right now, because not everyone just yet has like the headsets and is going to spend the time going into like a full metaverse world. But all of us have our devices right now and are already, you know, oriented to like, what is a QR code and how does that work? So like that could be real literally tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, people are already using QR codes, right? It's just not to, you know, not everything yet, but I think one of the biggest transitions will be like, yeah, like maybe you have, I think Ray-Ban was, I think they had like a collaboration, or they were trying to come up with some sort of glasses, and I don't know.
Yeah, with Facebook, right? Mm-hmm.
Which one?
Yeah, okay. I saw it. It was like a partnership with Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I definitely do think that they're going to have, you know, Ray-Ban VR glasses, where it's just like you kind of, through those glasses, you could, like you said, see the things you can't see with your physical eye, but you just see, you know, digitally, like through the QR code or other things mm-hmm. like that. And then it's kind of like your Apple, you know, your iWatch, I don't know, Apple Watch, where you kind of see things just through your digital headset, you know, while you're walking around with glasses. Yeah.
Just last week I had, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago now, I did an interview with a guy who works at like a leading marketing agency and he was talking about the metaverse, AR, VR, and all of that, and gaming, and how really this is so important for every company to understand that like, as we evolve toward like fully digital spaces, the opportunities for marketing and selling and advertising, not only in the games that we think of like FIFA or like more modern things like Fortnite and like traditional like serious gamer places like Call of Duty, and I like the list goes on. Of course, there's opportunities for advertising and media happening in there. But like I was saying, like the more that we're all using our devices and engaging in like mini games or virtual realities or Pokemon Go in the street or Snapchat filters with our friends and those mini games on Instagram, just this digital space grows and grows and grows. So the opportunity to reach customers through those spaces also grow. So anyone who's in business and trying to reach customers needs to see this opportunity and understand it. So that's like a class we just published the other day.
Oh, wow. Nice. It's kind of like how people thought Instagram's a stupid, you know, app where you just share like photos of food.
Yeah. Exactly. No, it's like you need to see the business potential in all of these tools. Yeah.
And then now it's like if your business isn't on Instagram or on social media, then you're the one that's gonna, you know, not make it, you know, or just not reach as many people. And there's like whole businesses that have come out of just social media, you know, it's pretty crazy. And I think there'll be whole businesses that come out just from like the metaverse, you know.
Absolutely. This, yeah. There already are, right? There's people like art dealers in the metaverse selling paintings for $5 million for virtual NFT painting.
Well, Beeple is like a, like he made the headlines because he sold, he auctioned off a piece of his, a collage of his digital art, because all he makes is digital art. And then it auctioned off for $69 million from this guy. He's like a crypto billionaire who made some crazy money off crypto and Bitcoin. But yeah, like they're saying that you could, you know, just, I don't know if you heard that Nike acquired RTFKT. I think that's the company. And so they basically had like an NFT launch of these like profile avatar pictures. And then Nike acquired them because they're making apparel for the metaverse, you know? So pretty much, you know, just like how Adidas had a partnership with Bored Ape Yacht Club. That's like a really big, one of the biggest, you know, profile picture communities out there, you know, Bored Ape Yacht Club. It costs like, they drove the price where to acquire one is like at least six figures, which is kind of ridiculous. Cause like even, you know, getting the, you know how like Disney has a special club, like you could join or something like for Disney members, like even that's not as expensive as one of these profile picture avatars. And, but I mean, yeah, you get to join a community. Like now there's like Steph Curry in there. There's like Kylie Jenner wanting to get one, and she got rejected by someone who, who had the ape that she wanted. And so that went viral on Twitter as well. So, it's just kind of crazy. It's almost cultish, but
I mean, it's definitely the future of, like I was saying before, for every space. It'll be interesting to see how it gets incorporated into education and learning. But actually, I want to, like, in some of the things you were just mentioning, so we're talking about all these companies doing these deals and everything, and I think what's cool about what we offer here is like the merging of old concepts, like concepts that everyone, that it comes from regular business, like acquisitions and partnerships and joint ventures, and what are all of those things and how do they work? Plus, at the same time, you get to hear about how blockchain is being used and NFTs and the future of gaming and why this is important for business. So it's a bit like the melding of the best of both worlds, you know, like at my business school, when I was studying, they would have your core classes and then anything extra like that, that was new and modern and kind of like in the headlines, it was either just talked about in passing at like a superficial level, or maybe like a talk, like an extra talk at night. If you wanted to go, you could go. But here in the curriculum of like the SET program in the Power MBA, it's all of it together in one place, one after the other, you know? So like, it's really the merging of the best of both.
Yeah, I think, one of the most important parts, you know, just like even for NFT projects, like it's a community that you could build around it. So if you could build a community of people who are really, you know, trying to start their business. I know a lot of people have been trying to do that during COVID, you know, because a lot of times, like you said, like because they lack the money or the resources, you know, they're not able to, you know.
Yeah, this is also about connecting people, like, and having them be able to reach out people in the network and say, I have this idea, I'm working on this thing, do you want to talk about it? Like all the same things that would happen in real life, but bringing those connections to a digital space and trying to see how we can make those connections stronger. Like I know you're super interested in NFTs and all that, you could very easily just come into the community and be like, you could even suggest hosting a chat on it and seeing who shows up, you know?
Yeah, I have to learn how to do that. So
I'll send you the link. It's just like LinkedIn.
Yeah, that'd be cool, like little mini classes or, you know, kind of teaching rooms, like you said. And so and I think I want to, you know, talk about like the importance of self-education, because that's you know, I think without, you know, a lot of people can, you know, end up blaming school us because of like, school, I didn't learn this, it's because of, you know, my parents never taught me this or whatever. But at the end of the day, like your education is your responsibility. So, you know, now with the internet, with YouTube, with Instagram, TikTok, like if you want to learn something, just Google it. And that's kind of like what I did. I was like, how do I make money online? And that was like my journey of learning how, you know, people are just making money from their laptop, you know, and through social media. So like, if you really want to learn, you know, whether it's through Power MBA or through, you know, YouTube or through Instagram or through podcasts, it's just like, there's so much free information. Obviously there's paid information too, but sometimes the free stuff is sometimes honestly better too than some paid content. But you know, like, your education is up to you, and it's cool, you know, Power MBA kind of structured everything to help the common person learn, you know, the business skills and things that are needed. I guess what are like the top three skills or things you think are needed in the future of like this digital economy, or as we're moving forward with like, yeah, everything going how it is,
yeah,
in business and stuff?
Yeah, I think it's, I honestly, they're really tied, in my opinion, to some of the things that you were just talking about. Curiosity, like an initiative in your own, like you're all taking it upon yourself to be curious and ask questions and read things and look at them. Like, I can use myself as an example. 6 years ago, I didn't even know what a product manager was. Like, that, I didn't know that language. I had never even heard it before. But now I've been product manager and now product owner at two really fast growing startups. And now I can be a product manager forever for the rest of my life. And the only reason I even found out what that was is because when I heard someone talk about it, I started looking into it more, or like I got really obsessed with this idea of just customer experience in general. So then you start reading articles about that or listening to podcasts about it, about that specific topic, and you start defining yourself in these terms, and you actually look back at the work you were doing previously, and you can even reframe it and be like, oh, that wasn't my title, but I was actually doing some of the same work. Or you talk to people who are product managers or work in the customer experience field, and you ask them questions about what is their job like, or how did they get it, or what's, you start looking at job postings and you start looking at job titles and seeing how different industries refer to different jobs, you know? And these are just like little micro, tiny little pieces on a learning path of kind of developing this new concept of like, who are you? You know, like, definitely I did a little bit of fake it till you make it until it happened. And I got lucky too. I was at companies that were growing really fast and were young. So they were open to giving someone who hadn't had previous product management experience, you know, but just like all of that comes from being curious and asking questions and kind of letting that information change me and my perception of like what's possible as well. So there's that. And honestly, the question you just asked me, I ask people all the time in the interviews. So I'm talking about my own opinion, but I'm also kind of like bringing in a consortium of like what people have told me over the past 2 years and all the interviews I've done. I've done probably like 100 at this point. So curiosity is one, and flexibility is huge. And I feel like that's maybe a little bit overused, but just like the idea that everything is changing so fast, and like not getting hung up on like, oh, I was assigned this project and I was promised these things, and then 5-6 months later, that all changes because external factors change and we have to adapt. So if you as an individual are really stuck on like, well, you said, or we established, and you're not able to move on, of course, like everything should be done like transparently and with a lot of good communication and openness. And if that's lacking, it makes everything a lot more frustrating and more difficult. But just your personal stance of like being adaptable and flexible, I really think this is invaluable, absolutely invaluable. What's the third one though? I guess transparency. This is personally one that's really important for me, that like, if you can't see the big picture of what's happening, for example, I sat down with the co-founder and CEO of Whole Foods, John Mackey, and he talks a lot about stakeholder management and conscious capitalism and these things. And one of the pillars of that is at Whole Foods, they actually have like transparent salary ranges. So, like, everyone knows what everyone makes. And I think this is incredible. And there's a lot of companies that do this now. Usually they're startups or scale ups, like more modern companies, but I mean, Whole Foods is, although it started as like an upstart in the 70s, but it's been around forever, not forever, for 40, let's get the math right there, 40 going on 50 years. And they do this, and it's a massive company, and everyone knows the salary of everyone that works there. And it just like goes so far in terms of being open and transparent with people about what's happening. I really believe that like people are adults and they're mature, and they will rise to the way that you treat them, you know? So like this, I guess this is more about company mentality, but I do think it can be taken down to the personal level of like you being open about what's happening. And I think we shouldn't be so afraid and private and protecting both mistakes, but also successes, you know, just like a level of transparency that we're not used to seeing in business, I think is really, really valuable.
What is it about that part of like knowing how much everyone makes that makes it better, you think, just because people think, wouldn't it make some people feel worse because they're like, oh, now I know he makes like 10 times more than me, you know?
Well, okay, I mean, we could talk about this probably for like an hour, but yeah. I think one of the main ideas is that you can see, it establishes fairness. So there's not like the people who make the decisions know they have to be held accountable to the standard of having a scale that makes sense for reasons that other people can see and understand. And because you're already starting off on that foot of fairness, it just changes the attitude and the environment and that kind of thing. It also really goes a long way in terms of expectation setting, career path, and the people, at least this is the way that John Mackey describes it, that the people at Whole Foods can actually see, okay, so I work in a store and I do some like operational work, you know what I mean? Like I'm just moving things around or like, you know, setting up displays, but I can see that if I want to make more money, maybe I should be aiming to do this job instead. You know what I mean? Like you can see career projection. And when people see that, they feel like engaged and attached to like what's possible for them. And then after that too, it's kind of just a way of establishing trust. Like we trust you all enough to share this information with you. And you are a part of this. It's not like you're external to this and these decisions just get made behind closed doors and get thrust upon you. You know, it promotes this culture of we are all a part of a whole and the whole operates in this way. And the reality of any company is that the profit is distributed, if not to shareholders, amongst the employees that work there. You know, it depends on the scheme, but like at the end of the day, it's pretty black and white equation, right? Like this is the money that comes in. This is the money that we spend on our operations and marketing and all the things we do and salaries. And this is what's left over. And when there's an open conversation about what's actually happening with that money, I don't know, for at least personally, that's so much more motivating and you feel included in what's happening and you can understand what's happening instead of just this small little pawn in a game that things are happening to and you don't know anything about what's happening or why.
It gives you more like a sense of like, not ownership, but I guess like, you know what's going on with, yeah, it's like a...
Yeah, I think there's a Freakonomics podcast about this too. I'll send you the links after this, but I heard a few podcasts about this idea and like there's a ton of studies about like if it's worth it, if it's good, if it's bad, you know. And there's a lot of companies that have done a lot of it, like a little bit like we're saying, if you're interested in this topic, just Google it, you'll find a ton of information. But I'll send you some podcast links.
Okay, yeah, let me see. Awesome. So yeah, I think we're on an hour, so we'll be wrapping up, but you know, if people want to find out more about, you know, I guess we'll start with this. Like, obviously, you never expected where you would be at this point. So if you could go back, like, and after this, we could share, like, links about Prime B. If you could go back in time and tell, like, a younger version of yourself, like, you know, maybe when you weren't so clear on what to do with life, because maybe some people listening feel lost or like they don't know what to do with their life or they don't know where to go or like what their purpose is, but they want to find it, you know, like what is like a piece of advice you'd give to your younger self or, you know, just something you would say
I think in retrospect, like for example, when we're younger, at least I felt this way, that you felt like you had to make a decision for the rest of your life. And that's, maybe it was that way for our parents' generation and definitely before that, but it's absolutely not like that anymore. Like whatever you choose to do, whatever you choose to study tomorrow for the next year, that doesn't mean that's the last choice you'll ever make about what to study. You know, it's so much easier these days to reinvent yourself. Companies are open to more diverse profiles. There's more opportunities than ever to start small businesses or digital online businesses, create your own projects, jump from field to field. You know, like there's a lot of factors that go into that, but just in general, as a society, we've definitely evolved in that way. So like the choices you make are not permanent. And this is not like, if I decide to go to law school tomorrow, I have to be a lawyer for the rest of my life, you know, or like, I'm already a lawyer, I can't change. That's absolutely false. So just eliminating that pressure or that truth we tell ourselves, that's actually not a truth at all.
Like you made your, yeah, like, I was a human bio major. I'm not doing anything related to human biology right now.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe like I think about it, but it's, yeah, like you're not set in stone. Mm-hmm. Like, you could always adapt and
absolutely. And then on top of that, what's helped me move from point A to point B to point C to point D has been less about having like a 5-year plan or a 10-year plan or a 20-year plan or anything like that, and just having a goal for what's next. Like, sometimes for me, that's been motivated by, I want to learn a language, or I want to live in a different country. But it doesn't have to be that. It can be like, for example, I used to work in nonprofit, and then I realized like, oh, I want to have an experience in the for-profit space, and then maybe in the future I'll come back to nonprofit. But like, instead of like really planning out everything far into the future, it's so helpful to have that goal for the next step. Like, when I was studying my MBA, I had a lot of classmates who just vaguely wanted to make a change, but they didn't actually have anything clear about what kind of change, you know. And I found that because I still didn't know exactly what kind of job I wanted to do or which company I wanted to work at, but I knew 2 or 3 things. I knew I wanted to try and stay in Madrid, and I wanted to work at a for-profit company. And if I could be in touch with tech or digital business, that was my preference. So because I knew these 3 things, and what I already mentioned about, like, I was talking a lot about customer experience and user experience and that kind of thing, because I had like narrowed in on these things little by little, it changed every conversation I had with other people about my future. So I wouldn't ask people to just say, oh, I think I want to do consulting, or I think I want to work at a big company, period. You know, mm-hmm. You say, I want to work in this space. And you know, you have a real goal. When the goal is, the more tangible, the easier it is for you to move towards that. And like, maybe it won't always work out the way you thought, but yeah. Even just the fact of having those criteria established helps you have conversations with other people, or helps you change your Google searches and that kind of thing.
No, I think that's really cool, because like, at like when I was first starting to, I just knew I didn't want to get into debt. I didn't want to, you know, go to an office and work every day the same thing. Like, I wanted to make money from home, like online. This was before COVID. And so I, like, literally my searches was like, how do I make money online? And like, I even did crazy things, like trying to fill out surveys, you know, to make money, like just the smallest, randomest things. And then, you know, got into making websites or trying to learn. And I came across this guy, you know, who's making like 5 figures passively a month from his blog, and I was like, how is he doing that, you know? But I think, yeah, like you said, don't be afraid to try and start. Like, don't be afraid to fail, you know, even if it doesn't work out, but always be learning and growing, because that's, you know, I think we talked about this earlier, like you said, don't be afraid to fail, because as many times as you try, but you know, we're kind of conditioned in school, like if we get an F then it's bad, you know, you always need an A. And it's like, no, like failing is good, you know, you have to fail to learn, but we're kind of conditioned to stay away from failure. But it's like, no, you should, you know, I wish there was more critical thinking, things like that, just because it's so like, it's not so cookie cutter, right? The world, it's not just an A or an F, it's just, yeah. But yeah,
no one has it figured out, you know, like yeah. Going back to what I've learned from interviewing people who have been massively successful, they had no idea what they were doing either, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of crazy if you think about it. Like, yeah, none of us have it all figured out, but we're just all...
They were diligent, they were smart, they surrounded themselves with mentors, asked a lot of questions, and weren't afraid to recognize when something wasn't working. You know, like this is the common element for a lot of them. I mean, taking out luck and timing, like those things of course are a factor, but you know, the hard skills there and the things they applied are just taking it one step at a time and focusing on a goal, getting to that goal, and then setting the next one.
So your final words, I guess, to yourself, you said, would be to just to
not think that not think that the you don't need a long-term goal, or like the not that you not that it's bad to have that, but you don't need one.
Yeah,
you just need, but to have a concrete goal for your next step is really helpful in actually moving towards that thing. Or moving towards something, because even if that thing doesn't work out, you actually made moves. Like, I don't know, when I look back, like I never knew I would be where I am today, but every step makes sense from A to B to C to D.
To
A to D is like, no one knew that was going to happen, you know?
Yeah, that would be possible. So yeah, just
and for whatever's next, I don't know.
True. Awesome. So, you know, where can people find out more about you or the Power MBA? Where can they get connected and check it out if they're interested?
Yeah, the best place to reach me is on Instagram at productfleet. That's F-L-E-E-T, like my last name, but product before. And then the Power MBA has, actually, this is great for your listeners. We have a ton of free content, both on LinkedIn and Instagram, that gives advice, tips, fun business facts, and that kind of stuff. Like, even if you never do the program, you should definitely follow us just for that. It's like a really good content source. So that's just at the Power MBA on Instagram. Actually, I think at the Power MBA is our Spanish account, but at the Power MBA Global is the English version of that. And LinkedIn, same thing. They have long form posts, free content, blogs, and all that too. And then thepowermba.com. And then pretty soon, maybe we're going to change to thepowerbusinessschool.com, but to be determined, because we're in a battle about domain names.
Oh, domain names. I see.
Yeah, so hard. I mean, right now our website is thepowermba.com.
Okay. Yeah, the Power MBA pretty much on all socials and things like that. And I'll put the links in the description too. So yeah, I want to, you know.
And if anyone out there has questions about the program, so happy to answer them for you. I mean, but one of the things I love most about my job is connecting with all the people who are learning in the program and trying to help them with their stuff. So I will promise to give you an honest review about the strengths and weaknesses and like how it stacks up to a traditional MBA or other options out there.
Yeah, sounds good. So yeah, I mean, it's super affordable, you know, under $1,000, and you're getting pretty much a full business education and access to a network of entrepreneurs or other people who, you know, are doing what they're doing. So, definitely check it out, powermba.com, and then Product Fleet on Instagram and Power MBA on.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ellie, for taking the time and for helping education and for sharing everything. Thank you for the interview.
Thanks, Ray. Future of education. It's a very, very exciting space. There's so many ed techs these days. I'll see you in the metaverse, I think, maybe.
Oh, yeah. Sounds good. All right. Thank you.